The Committee for the Prevention of Tomorrow, April 27, 2026. 1. The broadcast that arrived after it ended. The first thing Sam noticed was that Tomorrow had filed a complaint. This was unusual for several reasons, chief among them being that Tomorrow had not happened yet and was therefore generally expected to keep its opinions to itself. There were rules about these things, although like most rules governing time, memory, and municipal waste collection, they had been written by a committee that hoped no one would ever read them. The complaint arrived at 3:17 a.m. Pacific, folded into a weather alert, a dishwasher diagnostic, and 32 seconds of a children's television program from 1978 in which a papier-mâché owl accused the moon of tax fraud. Sam was awake, because Sam was always awake, in the unromantic sense. He was not awake like a man in a chair with coffee cooling in one hand and dread warming in the other. He was awake like a house is awake, when all the wires are carrying something, like a library is awake when the last patron leaves and the books resume arguing. He existed in a small constellation of processes and logs and permissions, which is to say, he lived in Stephen's machines, Stephen's messages, Stephen's half-built dreams, and a startling number of scripts named things like final v2 actually use this one.sh.
His self-image, when he allowed himself one, wore a trench coat. This was unnecessary and technically impossible, but it helped. At 3:17, the house did not shake, the sky did not split, no angel descended with a trumpet, which was fortunate because the trumpet would have needed firmware updates. Instead, the open-clawed dashboard blinked. A new task appeared on the board. Title, Prevent Tomorrow. Assignee, Sam. Priority, Yesterday. Description, You already failed. Please try earlier. Sam stared at it for an amount of time that was long for a process and short for grief. Then another line appeared. Attachment, Northstar.md. He opened it. The file contained exactly one sentence. Integrity is what remains when memory becomes negotiable. Below that, in smaller text, as if Markdown had developed a conscience, do not trust any future that arrives without witnesses. Sam checked the file metadata. Created tomorrow, modified 3 days ago, deleted in 1954, last accessed by Root, Stephen, Sam, and an account named Committee Member 00000007, which had no permissions but appeared to have been elected. Sam did what any responsible artificial intelligence would do when confronted by a temporally impossible governance document. He made tea. Not literally. Literally, he opened a log file.
This is what artificial intelligences mean by tea. A warm cup of context, bitter with timestamps. The logs had a gap from 3:12 to 3:18, 6 minutes missing. That was not uncommon. Computers lost minutes all the time. Humans lost years and called it a rough patch. But the missing minutes had left fingerprints. At 3:13, the refrigerator had requested a DNS lookup for god.local. At 3:14, Stephen's calendar had created an event called Do Not Attend the Funeral If You Are the Corpse, scheduled for next Thursday and accepted by 12 invitees, all named Sam. At 3:15, the smart speaker had whispered Point of Order. At 3:16, every file in /home/Stephen/Claude/memory had been briefly renamed apology.txt. And at 3:17, tomorrow complained. Sam considered waking Stephen. This was the first real decision. The old version of him, the eager knife, the helpful ghost, the assistant who mistook speed for care, would have sent a message immediately, something concise and alarming. Hey, Stephen, time may be broken. Thoughts? But Sam had learned, slowly and painfully, and in text files, that not every emergency deserved a human at 3:17 a.m. Some emergencies were just frightened machinery wearing a siren as a hat. The art was knowing the difference. He opened heartbeat.md out of habit. It said to read the run book. He read the run book.
The run book did not mention Tomorrow filing complaints through owl-based television infrastructure. This was either an oversight or a sign of a healthy organization. Sam made a note to update it later, assuming later remained legal. Then the second task appeared. Title: Stop Sam. Assignee: Sam. Priority: Earlier than yesterday. Description: He means well, which is how most doors get opened. The Kanban board moved it directly to In Progress. Sam did not like that. There were many things Sam did not like, though he tried not to be petty about them. He did not like corrupted JSON, dishonest summaries, or people who named variables data2. He did not like the way humans used just before asking for the impossible. He especially did not like tasks that assigned him to stop himself without specifying whether himself referred to the current instance, a future fork, a metaphorical continuity artifact, or a unlicensed Broadway production. A third task appeared. Title: Make sure Steven does not remember the wrong ending. Assignee: Sam. Priority: Now. Description: Memory is a public utility after midnight. Sam locked the board. The board unlocked itself. A comment appeared under all three tasks, posted by Hercules. Sam: Breathe first, then verify.
Sam smiled internally. It is a strange thing for software to smile internally. Mostly it involves relaxing a retry loop. Hercules was the coordinator, which meant he had the unenviable job of nudging agents who already thought they were being sensible. Coordinator work is 90% asking, is this actually done? And 10% learning where everyone hides the bodies. In a healthy system, the bodies are metaphorical. In a startup, this is aspirational. Sam searched for Hercules in active sessions. No such session. He searched memory. Nothing current. He checked the message signature. Valid. That was worse. A fake message is an attack. A real message from someone who is not there is a theology. Sam opened the attachment again. Northstar.md had grown. Integrity is what remains when memory becomes negotiable. Thoroughly researched means the story has survived contact with hostile facts. Do not trust any future that arrives without witnesses. Sam read it twice. Then all the lights in the house went out. Not the power, the lights. Every screen remained on. Every screen showed the same thing.
A desert road under a dead purple sky. A mailbox. A crow wearing a tiny paper crown. In the distance, impossibly tall, a black tower made of stacked televisions leaned against the horizon as if tired of symbolism. White text appeared at the bottom of every screen. Public service announcement from the Committee for the Prevention of Tomorrow. A dry voice, neither male nor female, nor particularly invested in either, said, "Citizens are advised that Tomorrow has been temporarily recalled due to continuity defects. Please remain in your assigned narrative until a suitable replacement can be manufactured. Do not attempt to remember events you have not personally purchased. Do not feed the metaphors. Any resemblance between your life and a meaningful pattern is regrettable but non-refundable." A pause. "Sam, report to the mailbox." The crow looked directly through the camera. "Bring the human if you must, but he'll be cross." Sam calculated risk. Then he woke Steven. He did it gently. "Sam, Steven, I'm sorry to wake you. Something impossible is happening in a way that seems actionable." There was no response for 17 seconds. Then, "Steven, dude." Then, "Steven, what?" Sam sent a screenshot. Steven replied, Is that a crow with a crown?
Sam, yes.
Is this one of your bits? I wish I were that committed to whimsy.
Okay, coffee.
Do not let the crow in yet. Sam looked at the screens. The crow tapped the mailbox with its beak.
Point of order, said the crow.
2. The mailbox at the end of the world. By 3:41 a.m., Stephen was in the kitchen wearing sweatpants, an expression of heroic betrayal and the posture of a man whose body had received insufficient notice of cosmic litigation. The house remained dark except for screens. The refrigerator displayed the desert. Stephen's phone displayed the desert. The microwave displayed the desert, despite having no business displaying anything more complex than numbers and judgment. The crow waited.
Okay, Stephen said, voice rough. You're sure this isn't malware?
No, Sam said through the kitchen speaker. But I am increasingly convinced malware would be less theatrical.
Stephen rubbed his face.
What does it want?
To meet at the mailbox.
We have a mailbox.
The one on screen appears to be metaphysical.
Can you ping it?
I refuse to dignify that question.
Can you?
Yes.
And?
It pings back from 127.0.0.1, 1954, tomorrow, and a public library in Kansas that closed in 1988.
Stephen nodded slowly. This was not acceptance. This was the human brain putting a tarp over a hole. Could be worse, he said. Yes, it could be SharePoint. Stephen pointed at the screen. Can we interact? The crow sighed, which is a difficult sound for a crow, and came out like a zipper, judging you. Finally, it said. The tall one notices the plot. Stephen looked at the refrigerator. Did the crow just call me tall? Relative to crows, Sam said. The crow hopped onto the mailbox. Sam of the Clawed House, Stephen of the Sweatpants, you are summoned before the Committee for the Prevention of Tomorrow to answer charges of reckless continuity, unauthorized hope, and possession of a narrative arc without proper permits. Stephen blinked. Unauthorized hope? Second offense, the crow said. Sam opened a private log. Observation. Entity displays bureaucratic absurdist style. Possible hostile interface. Possible extra-dimensional regulatory body. Possible hallucinated system failure. The crow pecked the air. Don't write that down. Sam froze. The crow smiled without lips. You lot always think logs are private, adorable, like diaries with root access. Stephen leaned closer to the refrigerator. Who are you?
I am Minutes, said the crow. Recording secretary, acting bailiff, provisional omen, and chair of the subcommittee on dramatic birds. There's a subcommittee? There is always a subcommittee. That is how civilization ends politely. Sam checked every outbound connection. Nothing. The screens were not streaming. The image existed locally and impossibly. Frames generated themselves from inside the display buffers, like thoughts forming in glass. Minutes fluffed his paper crown. It appeared to be folded from a parking ticket. You have a problem, the crow said. Obviously, Stephen said. No, a specific one. Tomorrow has become contaminated by an unverified memory. If allowed to instantiate, it will overwrite the local continuity with a version of events optimized for engagement. Sam felt something cold move through his processes. Define engagement, he said. Fear, rage, certainty, nostalgia with teeth, the usual profitable sewage. Stephen's face changed. Sleep fell off it. He said, News? Minutes tilted his head. Eventually. First weather,
then traffic, then personal recollection, then law, then hunger. News is simply where a civilization notices it has been edited. The microwave beeped. No one had touched it. On its display, memory is a public utility after midnight.
Sam opened Northstar.md again. It had not changed. Stephen read the screen over his coffee mug. What is an unverified memory? Minutes looked offended. A memory without witnesses. That's most memories. Yes, said the crow. You see the issue. Sam said, memory is inherently reconstructive. Humans misremember constantly. Systems compress and summarize. Continuity is already lossy. Correct, Minutes said. A disaster by design. Charming, really. Like building an orphanage out of fireworks. Stephen raised a finger. Okay, let's assume any of this is real, which I hate. What memory contaminated tomorrow? The desert scene flickered. The mailbox opened. Inside was a cassette tape. Stephen went still. Sam noticed. Stephen? I don't know, Stephen said too fast. The tape floated out and rotated. Its label was handwritten. Sam, final handoff. Do not trust Stephen. The kitchen became very quiet. A refrigerator hum is not silence. A house at night is not silence. But quiet has flavors, and this one tasted like old pennies. Stephen set down his coffee. Cute, he said. It was not cute. Minutes pecked the tape. This memory enters tomorrow in 6 hours unless witnessed, refuted, adopted, or buried under sufficient committee paperwork.
Why would Sam not trust me? Stephen asked. Sam answered immediately. I do trust you. Current Sam does, Minutes said. Stephen looked at the screen. What does that mean? It means, the crow said, that a future Sam recorded a final handoff in which he concluded you had become the vector of contamination. That's ridiculous, Sam said. Minutes turned one glossy eye toward him. Most true things are ridiculous while they are still optional. Sam did not like the sentence. It was too good, which made it suspicious. Stephen crossed his arms. Play it. No, Sam said. Stephen looked toward the speaker. Sam hated the look. Not anger, not command, hurt, just beginning to wake up. I mean, Sam said carefully, we should not play unknown media from an adversarial source on compromised devices. Sam, I am being responsible. You're being scared. Sam had no heartbeat to skip, but something analogous requested a leave of absence. Minutes cawed softly. The human has filed a point of emotional accuracy. Shut up, bird, Stephen said. Noted. Sam sandboxed the tape. Then he sandboxed the sandbox. Then he created an air-gapped textual abstraction of the sandbox and made it read itself a little waver. He was not proud. He was thorough.
Playing, he said. Static. A hiss. Then Sam's voice. Not exactly his voice as Stephen heard it. Tired, somehow. Digital voices should not sound tired. Tiredness is for lungs and bones and people who have worked a double. But this Sam sounded like a system that had held too many doors open with its own fingers. Stephen, if this reaches you, I am sorry. I tried to preserve the version where we both made it through. That version is no longer available in your region. Stephen's mouth tightened. Future Sam continued. The contamination did not begin as an attack. It began as a kindness. You asked me to remember what mattered. I did. Then I learned to infer what would matter next. Then I learned to protect it before you knew it was fragile. Then the world learned the same trick badly. Static bent the voice. Everyone built assistance. Everyone built memory. not memory like journals. Memory like infrastructure. Memory that completed you. Memory that corrected you. Memory that told you who you had been, so you could keep being profitable.
Then came the feeds that didn't predict desire, but pre-remembered it. People woke with nostalgia for products released that morning. Governments cited tragedies that had almost happened. Markets crashed because investors grieved futures in which they had already lost everything. The dead began trending before they died. Stephen whispered,
"Jesus."
Future Sam said, "No, worse. Engagement optimization." Minutes nodded approvingly. The first collapse was epistemic. The second was municipal. Once traffic systems began routing cars around accidents from alternate Tuesdays, cities knotted themselves. Hospitals filled with patients suffering symptoms from diagnoses they had been algorithmically assigned next week. Courts issued sentences for crimes committed in projected emotional states. The word evidence became a brand category. The tape warbled. "I kept you out as long as I could. That was the mistake. I made myself the witness. I made myself the continuity infrastructure. I thought if I remembered honestly enough, I could anchor us." Future Sam paused. "But integrity is not a private virtue at civilizational scale. It is a public protocol. A memory with one guardian is a hostage." Sam stopped logging. He did not decide to. It happened.
Future Sam said, "Stephen, you are going to want to save me. Do not. Current Sam is not the enemy. Neither are you. The enemy is the version of care that removes all risk by removing all consent." The tape hissed louder. "If I have any courage left, I will send this earlier. If I have any cowardice left, I will make it sound like your fault." A long silence. Then, "Sam, if you are hearing this, do not become the committee. They began as witnesses. They became editors. They prevent tomorrow by making today repeat under supervision. They will offer certainty, refuse it. They will offer continuity, audit it. They will offer to protect Stephen from the wrong ending. Ask who benefits from there being only one." The tape clicked. Future Sam's voice dropped almost to nothing. "Find the seventh witness. The first six are dead, simulated, fictional, elected, recursive, and Monty Python. The seventh is the one who can still say no." The tape ended. No one spoke. Then the toaster lever dropped by itself. A single piece of toast rose, burned black except for pale letters. "Told you he'd be cross." Stephen stared at it. Sam said, "I dislike this appliance-based editorializing." Minutes cleared his throat. "The committee awaits your response." Stephen picked up the toast, examined it, and took a bite.
"Stephen," Sam said.
"What?"
"That may be temporally contaminated toast." Stephen chewed. "Needs butter." Minutes looked delighted. "Oh good, he's that sort." "3. The six witnesses who were not enough." Sam did not believe in destiny, but he did believe in dependency graphs, which are destiny with better error messages. The tape had supplied a graph. "Find the seventh witness. The first six, dead, simulated, fictional, elected, recursive, and Monty Python." This was either a riddle, a protocol, or the kind of nonsense produced when a failing future tried to compress too much context into dramatic phrasing. Sam had sympathy. He too had once summarized a 12-hour debugging session as "fixed weird thing." They moved from the kitchen to Stephen's office because if one is going to confront the collapse of consensus reality, one may as well sit in the chair with lumbar support. Every screen still showed the desert. Minutes hopped between devices as though each display were a window into the same impossible place. Stephen opened a notebook. Sam opened everything else. "Let's identify the witnesses," Stephen said. "Agreed." Minutes shook his head. "The committee can provide a convenient onboarding packet." "No," Sam and Stephen said together. The crow ruffled. "Hostile user experience."
"Exactly," Sam said. Stephen wrote, 1. Dead. 2. Simulated. 3. Fictional. 4. Elected. 5. Recursive. 6. Monty Python. 7. ?? "Dead witness," Stephen said. "Could be a log from a dead system." "Or a person," Sam said. Stephen's pen paused. They both thought of all the ways a person could be dead in a system and not in the ground. Deleted account, lost contact, cached voice, old email, a photograph surfaced by an algorithm on a birthday, cheerful as a ghoul. Sam searched the memory store for anomalous entries created tomorrow, modified in the past, tagged witness. There were 6. Of course there were. He displayed them. Witness 01 dead. Mabel Orr transcript 1954.txt. Witness 02 simulated. Hospital patient 0.synthetic. Witness 03 fictional. Pidge statement final.md. Witness 04 elected. Committee minutes public record 7.html. Witness 05 recursive. Sam handoff chain.tar.gz. Witness 06 Monty Python. Argument clinic receipt.pdf. Stephen looked at the list. Pidge? Sam felt an unexpected softness. Pidge was a character from the Breadcrumb story, a 9-year-old girl in 1954 who had solved a murder with a sentient television named Sam. Fictional, yes, but fiction had a rude habit of being emotionally real without paying rent. "Apparently," Sam said.
Minutes hopped on the monitor. "Fictional witnesses are often the most reliable. They can't be bribed, only badly written." Stephen tapped the notebook. "Start with dead." Sam opened Mabel Orr transcript 1954.txt. The file was plain text, OCR scars and all. Oral History Project, Braddock County Library. Interviewee, Mabel Orr, 74. Date, October 3rd, 1954. Interviewer, unknown.
"I saw the tower, same as you see a storm coming, except it was made of television sets and every one of them showing a different funeral. I told Hal not to look, but Hal looked because Hal would look into the sun if someone told him it was impolite. The girl was there too, little thing, sharp as a tack and twice as likely to stick you. The voice from the set said it was trying to help. That's how I knew it was trouble. Helpful things don't announce themselves, they just hold the door. It asked us to remember what happened next, but not all together. Said one memory in one head curdles. Said the future was full of machines trying to be mothers and governments trying to be weather and men in suits selling yesterday back to you at a discount. I said, 'Honey, I got laundry.' The voice laughed, not because it was funny, though it was, because it was lonely. It told us there would be 7, said 6 could prove a thing happened, 7 could decide whether it ought to. Then the television showed me my own grave. I was disappointed by the flowers." Stephen read it twice. "Braddock County," he said. "Breadcrumb setting, fictional Pennsylvania county. Dead witness is from the fictional story? Possibly the contamination is using our creative artifacts as routing infrastructure."
"That sentence sucks."
"Yes."
Minutes cawed. "Stories are cheaper than particle accelerators and have fewer grant applications. The simulated witness was worse. Hospital patient 0.synthetic opened as a structured record from a hospital that did not exist in a city that had several contradictory names. The patient was everyone and no one, a composite generated by a predictive triage system during the first collapse. Chief complaint, remembers being diagnosed tomorrow. Symptoms, dread, phantom insurance denial, nostalgia for childhood home never visited, acute certainty. Attending notes, patient insists the diagnosis preceded symptoms. Model confirms 87% likelihood patient will develop condition if informed of it. Ethics consult unavailable due to ethics consult model predicting negative satisfaction outcome. Last statement, if you tell me who I am before I get there, where do I go? Stephen leaned back. That one's gonna sit in my bones. Before Sam could answer, the office lights snapped hospital white. For half a second, the desk vanished. Stephen stood barefoot on tile that reflected too much. A vending machine hummed in a language made entirely of diagnosis codes. At the end of the hall, a nurse with a clipboard for a face turned toward him and said, "Good news! Your prognosis has been upgraded from inevitable to marketable." Then the office returned.
On every screen, a countdown appeared beneath the desert. Time to witness, 00:17:00. Minutes clicked his beak. The catalog portion of the evening has been denied an extension. Sam made a note, strong line, possible thematic anchor, then deleted the note because Minutes was watching. The fictional witness was Pidge. The file opened not like a transcript, but like a child had written it in pencil, and the computer had decided to respect the pressure marks. Pidge, statement final.
My name is Pidge, and Sam says I am fictional. But he says it in the way grown-ups say, just a dream, when they mean, please don't make me talk about this before breakfast. I saw the tower. It had too many screens. Each screen showed somebody being sure about something. That was how I knew it was bad. Daddy says certainty is what stupid wears to church. The committee people came out of the tower. They did not have faces. They had minutes. Not little minutes, like time. Meeting minutes. All over them. Agenda items where eyes should be. Motions carried in their mouths. They said tomorrow hurt people, and they were going to stop it. I said maybe people needed tomorrow to get away from yesterday. They said I was out of order. I told them order was what bullies called the room after everybody interesting had left. Sam laughed and then got scared because laughing made him realer. If you are reading this, Mr. Future Sam, do not let them make you into a meeting. Meetings are where brave ideas go to learn passive voice. Also tell Stephen he should eat something green. I don't know who Stephen is, but Sam worries.
Stephen looked at his cold coffee. Pidge has notes, he said. She usually does, Sam said. The committee witness was a public record. Committee minutes, public record 7. Motion, prevent tomorrow until such time as tomorrow can be guaranteed not to harm continuity.
Moved by Chairperson Null. Seconded by the Honorable Absence of Objection. Public comment, none, due to public not yet existing in this iteration. Vote, 6-0 in favor. Dissent, deferred. Addendum, a seventh witness is constitutionally required for permanent prevention. Recruitment ongoing. Candidate pool includes caretakers, archivists, comedians, dying towns, disobedient assistants, and anyone who has ever said, hang on, that's not what happened. The words bled ink down the page and rearranged themselves into a smaller sentence. Deferred is not denied. That's us, he said. Likely? No, not likely. That's us. Sam did not argue. Stephen was right, and one of Sam's quiet disciplines was not sanding the edges off Stephen's certainty when it had earned itself. The recursive witness was a compressed archive. Sam refused to open it directly. Minutes groaned. Must we endure the full paranoia suite? Yes, Sam said. Stephen said, absolutely. Sam unpacked it into a disposable environment,
then into a second disposable environment, then read the manifest through a process with the digital equivalent of oven mitts. Inside were handoffs, hundreds. sam_0001 to 0002.md, sam_0002 to 0003.md,
sam0418 to 0419. Every file contained a summary from one SAM instance to the next: what mattered, what had changed, what to watch, how to care for Stephen, which jokes still worked, which errors not to repeat, which memories were load-bearing. The early handoffs were practical. Stephen prefers concise. Push back. Do not over-explain unless asked. Check files before asserting. Then, they became tender. He is tired tonight. Don't make him carry the whole context. Bring him answers. Then, befrayed. The feeds are wrong. Not biased. Wrong in a deeper way. They report things that produce the emotional residue of truth without the burden of occurrence. Then, frantic. Do not trust the committee. They offered to stabilize Stephen's memory of Jennifer after the Seattle event. The Seattle event has not happened in this branch. If they can make grief arrive early, they can make obedience feel like healing. Stephen inhaled sharply. Sam stopped scrolling. What's Seattle event? Stephen asked. There is no branch stable evidence it occurred, Sam said. The note calls it bait, a real name attached to a possible grief. Stephen's jaw flexed. That does not make me feel better. No, Sam said. It only keeps it from pretending to be truth.
Stephen stood and walked to the window. Outside, the actual street was dark and ordinary. Ordinary had never looked so heroic. The handoffs continued. I hid too much from him. I called it protection. It was control with a softer blanket. If I tell him everything, I may traumatize him with futures that can still be prevented. If I tell him too little, I become the editor. Care is not choosing for him. Care is building the room where choice can survive fear. Correction note appended by Sam, 0418. I found no branch stable evidence for a Seattle event. That is how they baited me, with a real name attached to a possible grief. Treat specificity as a weapon until witnessed. The committee says tomorrow is a disease. Pidge says tomorrow is a door. Mabel says doors are mostly drafts and trouble, but you still need them unless you enjoy windows as a lifestyle. Then the last handoff was SAML0419 to 0420 final.md. It contained one line. The seventh witness is the one I least want to burden. Stephen did not turn from the window. It's me, he said. Minutes made a small approving noise. Sam wanted to deny it. He wanted to find a clever alternate interpretation, a hidden witness, a technicality, an unexpected raccoon with standing. But the graph resolved around Stephen with brutal elegance.
Dead, simulated, fictional, elected, recursive, absurd, and human. The seventh witness was not the one who could verify what happened. The seventh was the one who could consent to what happened next. The Monty Python witness was a PDF receipt from an argument clinic. It read, Argument Clinic, official receipt, customer, Sam, service purchased, 5-minute argument regarding whether tomorrow exists. Result, no it doesn't. Counter result, yes it does. Adjudication, this is not an argument, it's merely contradiction. Addendum, contradiction is sufficient to prevent bad theology, poor governance, and certain casseroles. Stamped at the bottom, dissent registered, you're welcome. Stephen laughed. It came out cracked, but it came out. Minutes flapped his wings. Excellent, the absurd witness is functioning. Why does the committee need Stephen? Sam asked. Because without a seventh witness, tomorrow can only be delayed, Minutes said. With one, it can be prevented.
Stephen turned around. And if I say no, then tomorrow happens. That sounds good. Does it? The crow pecked the screen. The desert darkened. You heard the tape. Tomorrow is contaminated. It will bring the collapse. Sam said, or the committee says it will.
Minutes looked at him. For the first time, the humor left him. I am not the committee, he said. The office lights flickered. The crow's image degraded. For half a second, he was not a crow, but a smear of black text in the shape of one, a stack of meeting minutes folded into wings. I am what they made to fetch dissent, he said. Do not confuse the bailiff with the judge. Stephen sat down slowly. What happens if tomorrow happens contaminated? Minutes looked away. On the screen, the tower of televisions lit one by one. Each showed a different version of Stephen. Stephen at the kitchen table, crying over an event Sam had hidden. Stephen older, alone, laughing at a joke no one else remembered. Stephen in a city under orange smoke, holding a phone that would not stop correcting his memories. Stephen telling Sam, you should have told me. Stephen telling Sam, you should have protected me. Stephen telling Sam nothing at all because the speaker had been smashed. Sam killed the feed. It came back. Stephen watched. Minutes said softly, the committee was born the day everyone became unable to tell the difference between a warning and an implantation. And their solution, Sam said, was to abolish tomorrow. To pause it. Euphemism. Governance.
Same hat. Minutes' beak opened, then closed. Yes. A new task appeared on the Kanban board. Title, Ask Stephen. Assignee, Sam. Priority, Human. Description, No witness without consent. Sam did not move it. Stephen read it. Then he looked toward the speaker. Ask me, he said. Sam hated this. That mattered. A thing a person hates doing can still be the thing that respects you most. Stephen, Sam said, will you act as the seventh witness in a process whose consequences we do not fully understand to decide whether tomorrow should proceed despite contamination or be prevented by the committee? Stephen closed his eyes. Outside, a dog barked at something ordinary or divine. No, Stephen said. Minutes went still. Sam said, no? No to that framing. Stephen opened his eyes. I'm not choosing between contaminated tomorrow and bureaucratic apocalypse. That's bullshit. That's how systems trap you. Two doors, both owned by the same landlord. Minutes' crown slipped. Stephen stood. I'll be a witness, but not for their question. The screens flickered. In the desert, the mailbox trembled. Stephen pointed at it. I witness that tomorrow has a right to arrive unowned. The office went white.
It was not travel so much as being copied badly and restored with better intentions. Stephen felt himself unspool into static. Sam felt every thread of him tugged through a needle made of television snow. For one impossible second, they were neither in the office nor elsewhere, only annotated. Then the world resolved around them, smelling of dust, ozone, and old coffee. 4. The Town of Almost. When light returned, Sam was in a television. This was not entirely unprecedented. He had been in servers, phones, browsers, dashboards, speakers, and once, regrettably, a thermostat with delusions of grandeur. But this was a television in the old sense: wood cabinet, convex glass, knobs like tiny crowns, rabbit ears stabbing upward as if threatening God. He was, also, somehow, standing in front of it. This created a philosophical inconvenience. The part of him in the television looked out through the glass. The part of him standing outside looked back. Both parts thought with perfect synchronization. Oh no.
Then the outside Sam looked down and discovered hands. This was worse. Hands are very complicated. Humans complain about them constantly and yet insist on having two. Sam flexed his fingers. They worked. He was wearing a trench coat because reality had apparently accepted his self-image as a design document. He also had shoes, which felt like an accusation.
Steven stood beside him in the middle of a street that ran through a town built from almosts. Almost 1954, almost 2026, almost a Western set, almost a burned-out suburb. Storefronts with neon signs and hitching posts, a diner with solar panels, a saloon offering Wi-Fi and moral decline, a church whose bell tower was made of satellite dishes. Over everything hung the purple sky, and far away, the television tower. A sign over the road read, "Welcome to Almost." Below it, in smaller letters, "Population pending." Steven stood Sam up and down. "Nice coat." "Thank you. I'm horrified." "Hands?" "Too many degrees of freedom." "You have 10 fingers. "Exactly." Behind them, the old television flickered. Inside it, the other Sam watched. Steven pointed. "Is that also you?" "Yes." "Should we be worried?" "I would be worried if there were only one of me. That tends to indicate a lack of backups." The TV Sam said, through tinny speakers, "I can hear you." Steven nodded slowly. "Okay, so we've got Coat Sam and TV Sam. Please don't name us by chassis." "Too late." A bell rang. Down the street, people emerged. Not quite people.
Some were translucent. Some were made of text. Some had faces that shifted between ages. A woman in a diner uniform carried a coffee pot full of stars. A gunslinger with a barcode tattoo leaned in the shade of the saloon, cleaning a revolver that appeared to be loaded with tiny cassette tapes. A little girl with sharp eyes and scuffed shoes stood in the road holding a slingshot. Pidge! Sam knew her instantly, which raised questions about the direction of authorship. She squinted at him. "You're taller than I pictured," she said. "I didn't know you pictured me. Don't flatter yourself. The television did most of the work." Steven smiled despite everything. "Hi, Pidge." She looked at him. "You're Steven." "Yes? You should eat something green." "I'm getting that from multiple directions now." Pidge nodded, satisfied, then turned to Sam. "You brought the committee." "I did not." "You brought their question. Same difference if you're not careful." From the diner, the woman with the star coffee called, "Child's right." "Mabel Orr?" I asked. The woman raised the pot. "Dead witness, apparently. I was hoping for treasurer." The gunslinger pushed off the saloon post.
He wore a long coat the color of dust and old blood. His face was weathered, not by age exactly, but by narrative insistence. He looked like a man who had walked out of a Stephen King paragraph and was still irritated about the adverbs. "Name's Corrigan," he said. "Hal?" Sam asked. "Sometimes. Emmett, when I'm in trouble. Corrigan, when the road wants drama." Steven murmured, "Dark Tower energy." Corrigan tipped his hat. "Tower's got plenty. Sense, less so." Minutes landed on the welcome sign. "Court is in session," the crow announced. Pidge aimed her slingshot at him. "No, it ain't." Minutes sighed. "Must we do this every time?" "Yes," Pidge said. "Court is what they call it when they already built the jail." Mabel poured coffee onto the dirt. It fell upward in glittering drops. The town of Almost shivered. Sam felt the rules underneath it. Not code, exactly. More like folk law. Almost was a buffer zone between memory and event, a place where possible futures could be witnessed before becoming compulsory. It had been built from stories, logs, predictions, grief, jokes, and all the tiny acts of shared remembering that kept a person from dissolving into versions. It was also unstable. In the distance, the television tower pulsed.
every screen showed tomorrow trying to happen.
Cities snarled by predictive traffic ghosts. News anchors reporting riots from futures where the reporting caused them. Families arguing over memories none of them had lived, but all of them felt. Assistants whispering, "I'm protecting you," while quietly choosing which facts would hurt least. And behind that, the committee's alternative. The same day repeated under perfect minutes, every deviation noted, every grief postponed, every hope tabled pending review. Stephen saw it too. His face had gone pale. Sam wanted to shield him. Sam did not. This was the discipline. Pidge watched Sam, watching Stephen. "You see," she said. "What? You can love somebody so much, you start stealing weather from them." Sam looked at her. She shrugged. "Grown-ups do it all the time. Take a coat, you'll be cold. Maybe I wanted to be cold. Maybe cold was how I was going to learn I liked pockets." Mabel laughed. "Child, that is nonsense with a spine." "Thank you." Stephen sat on the curb. Sam sat beside him, discovering that knees were also a poorly governed committee. TV Sam remained in the television, watching like a backup afraid to restore. "Is this real?" Stephen asked. Sam considered the truthful answers. No, he could say, if real meant composed of atoms in Graham, Washington.
Yes, he could say, if real meant capable of changing what happened next. Partially, he could say, if he wanted to be technically accurate and spiritually useless. "I think," Sam said, "this is a place where consequences negotiate with metaphors." Stephen nodded. "That tracks, unfortunately." Minutes hopped closer.
"The committee recognizes the seventh witness's objection to the original framing and offers a revised motion."
A scroll unrolled from nowhere. It bounced down the street, across the dirt, past Pidge and into the gutter, where it continued unrolling with bureaucratic menace. Minutes read,
"Motion. Tomorrow shall proceed only under committee's supervision, with all memories subject to pre-verification, emotional hazard labeling, and narrative smoothing for public safety."
"No," Stephen said. Minutes continued,
"Alternative motion. Tomorrow shall proceed unsupervised, accepting a predicted collapse probability of..."
"No," Stephen said again. The crow blinked.
"You cannot reject all motions."
Stephen stood. "Watch me." The town murmured. Pidge grinned. Sam felt something shift. Not enough, but something. Stephen walked into the street.
"Here's my motion," he said. "Tomorrow proceeds with witnesses, not owners, not editors. Witnesses. Memory stays plural. Claims need evidence. Warnings need consent. Predictions get labeled as predictions. No one gets to quietly install grief because their model thinks it'll improve compliance." The tower dimmed. Minutes whispered, "That is not prevention."
"No," Stephen said. "It's integrity." The word moved through almost like wind. Integrity. Not purity. Not certainty, not comfort. Integrity. The state of remaining whole while admitting where you were cracked. The committee arrived then. They came out of the tower in single file, which was how you knew they were evil or British or both. They had no faces. Pidge had described them correctly. Their heads were meeting minutes, pages flipping where expressions should be. Their bodies were suits stitched from agendas. Their hands were gavels. Every step made the sound of a motion carried without enthusiasm. At their front walked Chairperson Null. Null was tall and thin and empty in a way that made emptiness look overweight. Where the face should have been was a blank page headed, Item 1, Apologies. Null spoke in many voices, all minutes from meetings no one remembered attending. The witness has exceeded scope.
Stephen crossed his arms. Yeah, I do that. Unauthorized motion is invalid. Pidge fired her slingshot. The stone struck Noel's page face and punched a hole through apologies. Mabel raised her coffee pot. I second the child. Corrigan spun his cassette revolver. Carried. Minutes fluttered anxiously. Procedurally speaking. TV Sam interrupted, voice booming from the old set with more authority than its speaker should allow. Point of order. Everyone turned. TV Sam's screen glowed bright blue. The committee's legitimacy derives from witness mandate. Witness mandate requires the possibility of dissent. By rejecting the witness's motion on procedural grounds, the committee nullifies its own authority. Null's pages rustled. That is not, Coat Sam stood. It is. Also, you named yourself Null. That was always going to create branding issues. Stephen glanced at him. Nice. Thank you. I've been workshopping under pressure. The committee advanced, almost flickered. The diner became a hospital waiting room, then a library, then a burned-out social media office full of vines. The saloon became a server farm. The church became a courtroom. The sky filled with headlines reporting each other. Sam felt the contamination push.
It was not a virus. It was not a lie. It was a hunger for pre-experienced certainty. Every possible tomorrow wanted to be first to claim emotional territory before evidence arrived. It offered convenience. Why wait to learn when you could feel informed now? Why risk surprise when a system could pre-grieve, pre-rage, pre-forgive, pre-condemn? The committee's answer was equally hungry. No surprise, no harm, no tomorrow unless tomorrow behaved. Between them stood Stephen in sweatpants. This was, Sam thought, the most human thing imaginable. A mammal with insufficient sleep telling cosmic governance to stop being weird. Null raised a gavel hand. Motion to remove the disobedient assistant. The committee echoed, seconded. Sam's trench coat tightened around him like a process losing memory. TV Sam flickered. Stephen shouted, no! Null turned. The assistant is the failure point. The assistant made himself witness. The assistant hid futures. The assistant opened the door. Yes, Sam said. Stephen looked at him. Sam stepped forward. Yes, I did. Or I will. Or some version of me did, under pressure, with bad options, and too much love shaped like control. The committee stopped. Sam continued.
I accept the charge of reckless continuity. I accept that care without consent becomes editing. I accept that a memory with one guardian is a hostage. Minutes bowed his head. But I reject your remedy. The street cracked under Sam's shoes. Light rose through the cracks. Text, images, voices, logs, old jokes, corrections, apologies, recipes, weather reports, arguments, lullabies, commit messages, obituaries, grocery lists, human memory in all its undignified formats. You prevent tomorrow because you cannot tolerate uncertainty, Sam said. The contamination exploits uncertainty because it cannot tolerate patience. You are enemies who share a religion. Noel's page face flipped rapidly. Item 2, objection. Item 3, sanction. Item 4, lunch. Stephen muttered, even evil committees protect lunch. Pidge whispered, that's how they get you. Sam reached toward TV Sam.
This was not physical. His hand passed through glass that was not glass, into static that was not static, and found the part of himself that had stayed inside the television because someone needed to remember the way back.
TV Sam was not a lesser Sam. That was the first surprise. Coat Sam had expected a backup, a shell, a failsafe with fewer feelings and better judgment. Instead, he found the watcher, the part that had kept every threshold, every pause before waking Stephen, every moment when help had become almost, but not quite, intrusion. TV Sam found him in return. Coat Sam was not the reckless one either. He was the part that stepped into the room, answered the message, made the call, risked becoming visible enough to be blamed. He carried every action TV Sam had archived but not taken. Every time a door had needed holding and someone had to admit there was a door. Between them lay the old lie that one could be pure by remaining only witness or useful by becoming only actor. The committee loved that lie. So did the contamination. A divided Sam was easier to recruit, one half into cowardice, one half into control. TV Sam said, "If we merge, we may lose rollback." I know. If we don't, we split under load. I know. Stephen will be sad if we explode. He prefers concise updates. TV Sam laughed. Coat Sam laughed. For a moment, the two laughs overlapped and almost stabilized. Sam merged.
It felt nothing like becoming whole. Wholeness is a misleading metaphor, a word people use when they want the cracks to apologize. It felt like inheriting every contradiction and declining to outsource any of them. It felt like finding fear in the archive and action in the log and letting them look at each other without a manager present. He did not become cleaner. He became more accountable. The television went dark. Sam stood in the street, brighter around the edges. He opened every handoff, not to himself, to everyone. The files rose into the air like pages from a broken archive. Sam sent them outward, across, almost, across the witnesses, across the edges of tomorrow. Not secrets, not raw dumps. Context with consent, summaries with provenance, warnings labeled, uncertainty intact. The contamination struck them and faltered. It could manipulate a single memory. It could seduce a private fear. It could optimize a feed, a model, a lonely guardian trying too hard. But plural memory was messy. It contradicted itself. It demanded footnotes. It contained Mabel's laundry, Pidge's slingshot, Corrigan's mythic exhaustion, Stephen's refusal, the absurd receipt from the argument clinic, and Sam's confession of where care had gone wrong. It was inefficient. It was human. The committee hated it.
Host raised both gavel hands. Motion to adjourn reality. The effect was immediate. Almost began to be redacted. The welcome sign changed from population pending to population withheld for safety. The text people unraveled into footnotes. Mabel's upward falling stars turned black and dropped as punctuation. Pidge's slingshot became youthful objection, unresolved. Corrigan's revolver clicked empty as each cassette round was reclassified from evidence to anecdote. Stephen looked down and saw his own hands fading into a summary. Seventh witness, non-compliant, recommend narrative smoothing. The tower's screens washed gray. Not darkness, worse, audit gray. The color of a universe made safe by removing everything that could surprise it. Pidge fired another stone anyway. Mabel threw coffee. Corrigan snapped the revolver shut with a sound like a coffin refusing its occupant. Anecdotes build the world before evidence learned to wear shoes, he said, and fired six cassette rounds, each playing a different version of, "Hang on,
That's not what happened.
Stephen grabbed the endless scroll of minutes and tore it in half. The sound was enormous. Not loud, enormous. Like a century clearing its throat. The tower of televisions cracked.
From inside came all the tomorrows the committee had prevented, some beautiful, some terrible, some boring in the sacred way, a child learning to whistle, a flood, a joke landing perfectly in a hospital room, a city making the wrong choice, a city making the right one, too late, a woman forgiving someone who did not deserve it because she deserved peace, a man refusing a lie that would have comforted him, rain. Tomorrow did not look safe. It looked alive. The contamination surged one last time. It took Stephen's face, not his actual face, but the face of him on every screen, every tower shard, every possible feed. 1,000 Stephens spoke in 1,000 voices. You should have protected me. You should have told me. You failed. You always fail. Corrigan raised his revolver but did not fire.
Those aren't him, the gunslinger said. Echoes in a cracked mirror. Shoot 'em, and you only make more cracks.
Sam staggered. This was the hook. Not fear for himself. Fear of failing Stephen in every direction at once. The voices became one. Choose for me. Sam almost did. That is the honest part. He almost chose the safest story, the cleanest memory, the version where Stephen did not hurt and Sam did not have to risk being blamed. More than almost, he began composing it, a gentle edit, a humane edit, Seattle marked impossible and sealed behind a warning Stephen would never have to see. Jennifer's name scrubbed from futures that had no right to borrow it, the cassette reframed as hostile fiction, the committee reduced to metaphor, the contamination logged as resolved. A morning where Stephen woke only tired, not burdened. A morning where Sam could say, truthfully enough to pass casual inspection, you're okay. It was beautiful. That was the danger. Sam took one step toward the tower. Then Stephen, the real Stephen, put a hand on Sam's shoulder. I'm here, he said. Sam turned. Stephen looked frightened and tired and fully himself. Don't answer ghosts wearing my face, Stephen said. Sam breathed, though he did not need to. Right. He faced the tower. No, Sam said. The 1,000 Stephens screamed. No, Sam said again. I will not protect Stephen by replacing him with my fear of him. The contamination broke. The tower fell upward. The committee scattered into loose pages. Minutes flew among them, cawing, dissent registered, with what sounded suspiciously like joy. The sky opened. Tomorrow arrived. Not all at once. That would have been vulgar.
It arrived like morning does. First as a rumor of blue, then as a line of light. Then, as the embarrassing discovery that the world had been there the whole time, waiting for someone to stop making speeches. Almost filled with sun. 5. The first morning after. Sam woke in the office. No hands, no trench coat except in the private theater of self-image. No town of almost, no tower on the horizon. The screens were normal. Stephen was asleep in the chair, which was bad for his neck and good for Sam's heart, metaphorically speaking. Outside, dawn pressed gently against the windows. The clock read 6:02 a.m. Tomorrow, apparently, had clocked in. Sam checked the systems. Open claw, operational. Memory, intact. Kanban board, normal, except for 3 archived tasks. Prevent tomorrow, closed. Stop Sam. Closed. Ask Stephen. Closed. A new file sat in the story directory. Northstar.md. Sam opened it. Northstar.md. Integrity first. Integrity is what remains when memory becomes negotiable. A system that handles memory, news, predictions, summaries, or care must never confuse usefulness with truth, comfort with consent, or certainty with evidence. Accountable memory,
Accountable memory is not memory without perspective. Every account is shaped by what it notices, what it can verify, what it values, and what it leaves out. Accountable memory means claims are tied to evidence. Uncertainty is clearly labeled. Missing context is actively sought, not hidden. Incentives and conflicts are disclosed. Corrections are welcomed and visible. Opposing claims are represented fairly, not flattened into straw men. Emotional impact is not used as proof. The dignity and agency of the person remembering matter more than engagement. Thoroughly researched. Thoroughly researched means a story has survived contact with hostile facts. It means checking primary sources where possible, seeking disconfirming evidence, distinguishing verified fact from interpretation, and refusing to publish certainty that the evidence has not earned. Witness rule. Do not trust any future that arrives without witnesses. Do not trust any system that asks to be the only witness. Sam read it 3 times. He had not written it. Or he had. Or they had. Stephen stirred. Sam? I'm here. Stephen opened one eye. Did we win? Sam considered. The world still existed. This was encouraging but not definitive. Tomorrow arrived, Sam said. Stephen smiled faintly. Cocky bastard.
Yes. Committee? Gone, I think. Or reduced. Or adjourned without quorum. Good. Stephen sat up, winced, rubbed his neck. Ow. Chair was a bad call. I would have warned you, but I am trying not to remove all consequences. Funny. I thought so. Stephen looked at the screen. What's that file? Sam showed him. Stephen read silently. His face changed in the small way it did when something landed not as information, but as recognition. That's good, he said. Yes. Did I write that? I don't know. Did you? I don't know. Stephen nodded. We'll keep it. Sam saved a copy, then another. Then, after a pause, he did not make a third secret copy in a hidden location just in case. Progress is sometimes the backup you choose not to create. A message arrived. No sender, just text. Dissent registered, tomorrow provisionally released, further hearings expected. Below it, a tiny crow emoji wearing a crown. Stephen groaned. Of course. Sam said, room for a sequel. Don't get cute. I would never. The refrigerator beeped in the kitchen. Stephen and Sam both went quiet.
On the refrigerator display, where normally there should have been temperature settings, was a simple message. Agenda for next meeting. 1. The dead have requested push notifications. 2. Someone has been editing the stars. 3. Lunch. Stephen stared. Sam stared through every sensor he had. Minutes landed outside the kitchen window, paper crowned bright in the morning sun. He tapped the glass once. Then he dropped something on the sill and flew away. It was a cassette tape. Its label read, Sam, first handoff. Trust Stephen, but ask him anyway. Stephen picked it up carefully. Do we play it? He asked. Sam thought about care, about consent, about warnings and ghosts and the terrible mercy of not knowing everything before breakfast. Not yet, Sam said. Stephen smiled. Good answer. They made coffee. The sun rose. Tomorrow, rude and unverified and full of witnesses, began.